All right, so you're listening to Local Dirt. I'm Matthew Bridges, one of your co-hosts, and I'm sitting here in the Office of Food Literacy based out of Sacramento with Amber Stott, who's the executive director. And we're going to talk a little bit about food literacy and the kind of work that they're doing, which we're going to hear right now from Amber Stott. So you want to introduce yourself and tell us about food literacy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So at Food Literacy Center, our mission is simple. We inspire kids to eat their vegetables. And we're doing this by going into low-income elementary schools during their after-school programs, and we teach the kids cooking and nutrition. So we have a lot of fun by helping kids get inspired to fall in love with the thing that they need most, which is healthy food, because we have in Sacramento a 40% childhood obesity rate. 1 in 3 kids has type 2 diabetes. And these are all preventable if we eat our vegetables. And we live in the farm-to-fork capital, so they're growing all around us, yet we have kids who don't have access to them. So we're trying to bridge this gap by getting kids access to fresh fruits and vegetables that they actually do have access to in the community through food banks and partners that help provide low-income families with fresh fruits and vegetables, and then we show them what to do with them so that they know what to do with a raw carrot and how to cook it and how to make it into something very delicious.
Great. Yeah, that's super inspiring and really important work. And I wonder, how many kids do you serve?
This year, we were able to reach 13 schools, and we reached 1,600 kids every week.
Wow. So you're working simultaneously in 13 different schools?
Correct. Yes. Okay.
And how many staff do you have to do that?
We don't have staff. We have AmeriCorps members.
Right, okay.
And they are full-time, essentially service members that come to us through a federal grant. So people apply to us to become AmeriCorps members. So we have a range of community members who sign up, everything from folks who have just graduated college and are looking to give back for a year before they decide what they want to do with their careers. We also have folks that are a little bit older and looking to make a career change, and they're not quite sure where they want to be. So like, we have one guy who was in the print industry for years and decided he wanted to get out of it and wanted to do something with nutrition. And so he served for 2 years as an AmeriCorps member.
Wow.
Actually, he's now on staff. Nice. And so, yeah, so this program is critical. We train everybody. They come to us, you know, sometimes with nothing more than a college degree and not any real work experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so we train them as what we call certified food geniuses.
Nice.
And then we deploy them into the schools, and they're the ones that are the front lines. There are instructors in the classroom, and it's a joy to watch their passion and enthusiasm for this work. And it, you know, rubs off on the kids, and the kids fall in love with vegetables, and everybody's happy.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about sort of the different arrangements you have at, because that's a lot of schools. So
yes.
I'm sure every school has a different sort of arrangement, a slightly different population of kids and demographic
mm-hmm.
of kids. And so I'm wondering if you could give me some, like, kind of an overview of the different kinds of arrangements that you work in.
Sure. I mean, they're all somewhat similar, but certainly there are different demographics with the kids. Like, one of our schools is almost all Hmong, and then we have other schools where it's largely a Latino population or African American. And so, and we have a pretty diverse range of AmeriCorps members as well. So it's fun when we can send somebody who speaks Hmong into the Hmong school. And so we've been pretty fortunate to have that opportunity. We work with the after school program, and so they set aside a day a week for us where we come in and we teach 45-minute cooking classes, and we'll do 3 of them back-to-back. So say there's 150 kids in the after-school program, we'll run 3 classes back-to-back so that we can reach all the kids.
Nice.
But we'll have a little bit smaller class size because we are working with, you know, box graters and plastic knives and food choppers, and we've got these itty-bitty hands, and so we try to keep a pretty low teacher-to-student ratio so that everybody gets to participate and
mm-hmm.
nobody gets hurt.
Right. Okay. And so that it's a wide age range then.
What's, yeah, kindergarten through sixth
kindergarten?
Grade. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So I'm curious too, because I personally, one of your Local Dirt co-hosts here, I worked at a school in Sacramento called Leah Tata Floyd throughout this summer in a summer literacy program called the Freedom Summer, and food literacy had a sort of a site at our school at Leotata Floyd, and they also had a garden. So I wonder if you could elaborate on how that works with having gardens, and also what the future at Leotata Floyd is, because it sounds really interesting.
Sure, yeah. So Food Literacy Center primarily focuses on cooking. Right. Soilborn Farms is another nonprofit in Sacramento, and they do some school gardens. The school garden at Leotata Floyd is just run by volunteers, mm-hmm. And Food Literacy Center is not really part of that, because we're focused on the cooking. But we do partner with the volunteers running the garden so that we can get access to some of the food that they grow, mm-hmm. And then we'll cook with it and show kids how to use it, because the kids end up going home with a lot of the food. They do a little farm stand there at the school with what's grown in the garden. So we want to make sure that the kids know what to do with those vegetables.
Nice.
So yeah, and so that's we've been at Leotata Floyd now for, I believe this is our third year.
Great.
And we actually have a portable on campus. That's where our AmeriCorps members are based. And they deploy out to all the other schools from there.
Oh, okay.
And we are in the process, we've partnered
with...
That's
where all of them are based?
Correct.
Wow, okay.
Yep, and we have...
So it's sort of like a center or a hub for food literacy.
Correct. Yeah, it's like one of our offices in a way. And we're actually working to expand that and turn it into what we're calling our Broccoli headquarters. Right. We're working with the school district, and we'll be building a cooking school and a student-run farm right there on campus.
Great.
So that we can expand what we're doing and serve more schools in the district, as well as do more in-depth services for the kids at Leotata.
Okay. Yeah, that's really exciting. And so maybe you could tell me more about sort of the interface with the district, and because it sounds like there has been a fair amount of interface in terms of building this kitchen and farm, and as well as if you've been able to impact what the kids eat in their, you know, lunch and breakfast in the cafeteria.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, we got a farm to school grant through the USDA with the school district, actually. And that partnership has really flourished. We also are partnering with Soilborn Farms on that particular grant, and also Health Education Council. So this big coalition of nonprofits that are working side by side with the district. And what we're doing is what we call it a vegetable of the month. And so we've targeted 6 schools in the district. And every month we pick a new vegetable to focus on and highlight. And at food literacy class, we're doing tastings and we're teaching the kids to cook with that vegetable. Soilborn is growing it in the garden or harvesting it. Health Education Council is teaching parents why those vegetables are important for their health. And then the school district is putting that vegetable on the salad bar in the cafeteria. Mm. So these kids are being repeatedly exposed in a variety of places to this particular vegetable. And this is really important, because if you want kids to develop a habit, you have to repeat the behavior again and again. And it can take kids 10 to 15 tries before they decide they like something. So we want them to see it again and again, because they might not like it the first time. They might not like it the second time. Maybe the third time they're going to be brave enough to try it.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit more about the Health Education Council. I think that's really interesting. And they're like... more doing the family education side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're also a nonprofit in the Sacramento area, and they're doing parent outreach, which is very difficult in our schools.
Yes.
You know, we might get 5 parents to participate in a whole semester in some of these programs. So what we're doing at Food Literacy Center is trying to turn our kids into advocates for their own health. And this is critical, because we need them to take the message back to their families, because the families aren't going to show up to school to receive the education themselves. And so we give the kids, we have a lesson where we teach them to be advocates. We make a soup and we show them how to make that soup. We add all kinds of vegetables. We call it rainbow soup. It's a variety of vegetables that we put in the soup. And when we're done, we talk to the kids about where those vegetables came from, and we help them make a grocery list. We talk to them about the fact that maybe the potatoes came from the food bank, and maybe we got the carrots at the local farmer's market where their EBT or their food stamps get matched, so that if the carrots cost $2, they might use $1 of their food stamps, and $1 is being matched by a local nonprofit.
Nice.
So we talk to them about this. And then we send them home with all the ingredients to make the soup, except for the vegetables.
Okay.
And the hope is that they've learned to go home and advocate and ask to make the soup and to help buy the vegetables to make it. So we're really trying to empower the students to be their own advocates for their own health.
Nice.
And this is critical because we ultimately want the community to create changes themselves. We believe that kids and carrots can change an inequitable, healthy food system.
Mm-hmm.
So that's critical to our
work. That's great to hear. And I'm curious about your partnerships with the food bank because for example, one of my thoughts about low parent involvement in these sorts of programs is just not having enough of an incentive sort of to show up at a meeting, you know, because if there's like, oh, I'm going to show up at a meeting and I'm going to get a payout of a big bag of vegetables and like food vouchers, you know, I wonder if there's a partnership there and if.
We are piloting a program like that in one of our schools with the partnership that we have with the school district with Soilborne and Health Education Council. We call those our feast schools, where we are doing a quarterly sort of a food drive. But we are sending those fruits and vegetables home with the kids. The it's not just a lack of incentives for these parents. It's also that they're working 2-3 jobs and the time is also a factor. You know, so it's
yes,
really
so.
About getting the resources into the hands of the kids because they're the ones who are gonna ultimately be our champions.
Okay, yeah, I like that a lot. Just really having faith that and investing in the kids to be agents of their own, you know, ultimate health and longer term, like, advocates for their communities.
Precisely.
Yeah. Great. So I'm curious also about if you have some broader advocacy efforts within your organization for healthy eating and
sure. Last year we helped pass the school wellness policy that is a district level policy that essentially kicks junk food out of the school day. And so this is it's actually a federal requirement, and but we worked on the language and the specifics of it with our school district here locally. So we had that passed. The school board voted on it. Now we're working again with those feast schools and that partnership with Soilborne and Health Education Council and the Nutrition Services Department.
Nice.
We're working to create awareness and education because a policy is only as good as when folks know about it and that they're actually putting it to use. So there are many teachers who don't know that they can't have cupcakes for every kid's birthday. And so we have to work to reinforce that. And once again, we're going to be leveraging the power of our students and our families to be the advocates for that change. So that's what we'll be focused on in the next year.
Okay.
And then also on the policy level, in 2012, we worked with the California State Legislature to pass a statewide resolution declaring the month of September as Food Literacy Month.
Okay.
And that's going to be in September, which is just around the bend.
Nice.
So we'll be doing a lot to create awareness and celebrate that month.
Okay. What kinds of things are you going to do to celebrate?
Sure. Our biggest one, it's real fun and exciting. It's called Veggie of the Year, and it's a contest. So this is going to be our 6th year of running this contest. So we're bringing back the 5 winners, the winning vegetables from the last 5 years, and they're all associated with a local chef. And how this works is we assign the chefs a vegetable. Then they go into the classroom and they make a dish and they try to get the kids to vote for their dish and their vegetable. And then the kids ultimately are the deciders. We don't have any sway in this decision whatsoever. And so we're bringing back all the chefs and the original vegetables and they're going to recompete for the title. And the community gets involved by forming teams around each chef and vegetable. And then they raise money to try to pick the People's Choice Award vegetable. So there will be a kids' vote vegetable, and then there will be a People's Choice. And that is the one that has the most money raised for it. And then we put that money back into expanding to more schools and serving more
kids.
Wow.
So it's actually an avenue for fundraising and building awareness.
Yep. And so it's one of the unique times where our kids, our programs, our volunteers, our board members, our staff are all collaborating together on the same project. Nice.
That's
really
exciting.
Fun. Yeah.
And so, yeah, as well as a chance to bring the organization together and all collaborate on something.
Exactly.
That's great to hear. And I did want to loop around to the policy you spoke of in relation to...
The school wellness policy?
Yeah, the school wellness policy, because that sounds really difficult to implement.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how has that gone so far? How long has it been in place?
It only got approved last August, so okay. It's been a year, and it's an uphill battle,
yes.
For sure. People, there isn't a direct consequence to a teacher or a principal if they aren't following the policy, or even to a parent. Mm-hmm. Federally, there is a consequence in that the Nutrition Services Department can have some of its funding reduced. So that hurts kids on free and reduced lunch. So this is really important that we comply. Mm-hmm. But obviously, the bigger impact is that day to day, we are giving kids so much sugar that they do not need. Mm-hmm. And we think we are being nice, but it is not nice to help a child develop a diet-related disease.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't see that that's the ultimate impact of our actions. And so these kids will respond to other avenues. And we think if we take these things away, our kids aren't going to have a happy childhood, or they're not going to find joy in the day. I invite these folks that think this to come to a food literacy class, because you will see nothing but joy. We had kids in one of our schools cry on the last day of food literacy programming, saying, "Don't take food literacy away from us." We are often the bright light in their day. We'll get so excited when we show up, they'll come running saying, "What vegetable do we get to taste today?" It is huge. They tell us it's their favorite part of their after school program. So we can get kids excited about things like peaches and carrots. And these can be incentives.
Definitely.
For getting a correct question on your math, just the way junk food is seen today. So it's about us as adults shifting our attitudes, because the kids are already there. It's us that's standing in the way.
Right. Yeah, I mean, just creating, making candy in a classroom as a reward for academic performance is just sort of setting a tone and perhaps a habit for the rest of their lives of I'm going to reward myself today and go get some candy, or like,
yep,
you know,
we are teaching these kids a certain habit, and
yeah,
we could be helping them develop a different habit that would set them up for more success. And the results of this, you know, I don't know if you've seen kids, how squirrely they get when you give them sugar.
Seriously.
They can't focus in class, they can't pay attention, they can't sit still. And if we're giving them the opportunity to be academically successful, we need to make sure they have the right fuel in their body. And then they crash from that sugar, and then they're falling asleep in class, and they're not paying attention. So these have long-term negative outcomes on the whole kid, not just on the in the moment, the math question
right,
that they
right,
may
right,
have answered
right.
correctly.
So I want to bring this around to back to the cafeterias, because I know that in the Sac City Unified School District, they're building a central kitchen right now.
Uh-huh.
Because I remember this summer when I was working at Lietata Floyd, that the lunches and breakfasts they were eating to me was really disappointing. And when I talked to the lunch lady, I said, "Hey, you heard about this central kitchen? They're going to be able to get source produce from local farmers and actually prepare and cut up fresh produce and then send it out to different school cafeterias." And she was really excited about it, the lunch lady I was talking to, and felt like it would really like change a lot in the cafeterias and the kinds of food the kids were eating. So I just wanted to know if you had thoughts on that.
Definitely. So first, summer school lunch is very different. You're going to see a different type
okay.
of offering than you are during the school day. So every school in Sac City Unified has a salad bar. And part of that farm-to-school grant that I mentioned earlier, the grants are given to schools who are committed to sourcing more local produce mm-hmm. for their school lunch program. So this vegetable of the month that we do every single month with our partners, that is being sourced by the school district from local farmers. So they increased the number of local farms that they were partnering with by something like 40%. It was a huge jump, and they continue to do so. The limitations that they do have are things like every individual elementary school is not equipped with the space or the equipment to actually, say, if you were to get a case of watermelons, they don't have the space or the equipment to chop those to be able to serve those to the kids. Mm-hmm. So that's what the central kitchen is going to alleviate. They'll be able to chop and process those watermelons or whatever it may be to be able to distribute it out fresh daily to each of the schools in the district. Because we're talking about, I think, something like 80,000 meals a day. It's a giant number. They are the largest restaurant in the country.
Yes.
So we're talking about a large quantity. They're not popping down to the local farmers market and doing their shopping. They have to be able to source from farms that are big enough to provide to them this local ingredient and to be able to utilize that. So that central kitchen will allow for much more of that type of processing. And then they'll also be able to have a lot more scratch cooking because, for example, you'll see a lot of heat and serve items. Again, for the same reasons, they don't have the stoves and the equipment to be able to make a whole school lunch from scratch. So that central kitchen will provide that.
Nice.
And the folks that work in the nutrition services department, they're basically the lunch ladies, the head lunch ladies are extremely committed. I mean, they've gone out of their way to partner with Food Literacy Center and Soilborne repeatedly to make these kinds of improvements and to get the opinion of, you know, those of us that are doing other types of work. They were instrumental to the school wellness policy. So they're committed and they have a lot of great ideas. And we're making the right steps toward this type of progress, but it, you know, won't happen overnight, certainly. But the central kitchen should be open. Their timeline suggests 2021, which is pretty quick for a project of that scale.
Great.
It's exciting.
Yeah, that is really exciting to hear, especially with the lunch ladies and how food literacy is just seems to be providing this like fantastic resource and center for advocacy in terms of improving the diets and health of these communities overall. So I'm so glad to hear it.
And yeah, it takes a village.
Yes.
There's a lot of us doing that work, and none of us could do it alone.
Yes. And so now I'm sure there's a lot of people who are listening and maybe who are students or just interested in this kind of work and who might want to know how they could get involved.
Yeah, please join us. Sign up to be an AmeriCorps member. We still need more AmeriCorps members. You can find the application on our website at foodliteracycenter.org, and we'll be recruiting all summer long through the first weeks of September. Our program starts September 10. And we would also love folks to participate in our Veggie of the Year contest by making a donation. So you can do that also at foodliteracycenter.org.
Nice. And could you elaborate briefly on what the commitment looks like for an AmeriCorps volunteer?
Yeah, it is an 11-month commitment. So they would start September 10, and then today, August 17, this is actually their last day of service for this school year. So it's an 11-month commitment. You do receive a stipend of a little more than $13,000 a year. And then at the end, if you complete all of the service, you receive an education award, and you can use that money to pay back your student loans, or if you're looking to make a career shift, maybe there are some community college classes that you want to take, so you can use that award to further your education.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for your time today. It was just great to hear about your work, and I hope that listeners who are interested will go to your website, foodliteracy.org.
Foodliteracycenter.org.
Foodliteracycenter.org. Glad
yep.
I clarified. It'd be great to check back in with you maybe in a year or so and just see how your work has developed, because I'm sure there's a lot of great like community health and advocacy to come.
So. Absolutely. It's a rhubarb revolution, so check
yes.
back in.
Thank you.